Okay. A very good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining. I'd like to extend a heartfelt Mazel Tov to every one of you, because running a kashrus series like this and packing in the amount of information that we did is really a group experience. And I thank you for the encouragement and the interest and the attendance and the feedback. And I think, as you'll see by the time we're done today's session, that we've accomplished an enormous, enormous amount. My goal for tonight is threefold. Number one, to cover three topics that we didn't cover in any great way, and I think they're just hanging there and they think they're important. Number two, to do a global review on all five sessions. And number three, to give you the test that I had a lot of joy in making up. It is multiple choice. At least one answer in every question is totally false. And therefore, the requirements for this test are: circle any correct answers, and there can be more than one correct answer, and X the answer that absolutely is clearly, in your mind, totally false. So I hope that we'll have some fun. Let's begin. On page number 9, you'll see the three items which I'd like to cover tonight as new topics. Number one, Pas Yisrael, specifically on Shabbos. What is Pas Yisrael? So by definition, if we're willing to eat bread, it's got to be that it's kosher. That's not our issue. There's a special halacha similar to the concept of Bishul Yisrael, that food that's cooked has to be cooked by a Jew. A Jew has to have lit the fire. So we have such a concept by pas, by bread. However, by bread, it is much more lenient, because we allow bending the rules when necessary. Again, of course it's kosher. That's not our question, is not the ingredients. Our question is, who lit the fire? And the reason that we're lenient by Pas Yisrael or Pas Palter, bread of a non-Jewish baker, as it's called, is because Chazal recognized that people can't function without bread. Now, I know that some diets that are out there today might argue, but that's the way Chazal saw it. Lechem levav enosh yisod. Bread is a staple. Bread is necessary. And therefore, if a person's in a community where he can't get bread baked by a Jew, or he can't get bread baked by a Jew that's of the same quality as what he can get from the non-Jew, he finds the non-Jew's bread much more tasty. As long as the bread of the non-Jew is kosher, he's allowed to do that. There's a fascinating question in Tshuvas, just to be broad and open-minded. What happens if a person makes their deli sandwich with bread that's pas palter because they're in a community that doesn't have bread baked by a Jewish baker, and then they take a train ride from one place to the other? That's how the tshuva is written up in Minchas Yitzchak. He was asked, I think, Manchester to London or something like that. one way or the other. He gives an example where by the time the person gets home, he has half a deli sandwich on bread that in the current community, he would never make his deli sandwich on such bread. But because of Baal Tashchis, is he allowed to finish the sandwich? Very cute shaila. But it highlights that this is 100% kosher. It's just that Chazal wanted us to eat bread baked by a Jewish baker. You have bread baked by a non-Jewish baker, totally kosher, just not baked by a Jewish baker. It's acceptable if you don't have an alternative. Except for Shabbos. On Shabbos, a person is supposed to eat Pas Yisrael. Mishneh Brura writes, Ayin ba'acharonim, look at the contemporary poskim, who are called the later ones, compared to the earlier ones. Da'afilu ha'noagim lecho pas palter shel eina Yehudi b'chol, even if a person normally eats bread baked by a non-Jewish baker during the week, keep in mind that 100 years ago, ingredients weren't so sophisticated. The baker baked, he baked. As long as you knew that he wasn't putting in lard, there wasn't a whole lot that he was going to do to your bread. Even if you did that, Mikom makom b'Shabbos v'yamtif nachan lizar shelo leechol kim pas Yisrael. It's proper on Shabbos to be careful about pas Yisrael mipnei kavod Shabbos v'yamtif because of the honor of Shabbos and yamtif. Now we're familiar that Shabbos and yamtif we want to be able to do the mitzvah of challah and we want to have all kinds of extra zechusim and lechem mishneh should be with holiness and braided by a Jewish person and everything else. He's not talking about that. After you've done your Lecha Mishnah, he's still describing that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, a person should preferably eat Pas Yisrael. Yeah?
Shouldn't he say one underneath the OU or whatever, Pas Yisrael, so you know?
Yeah, so it should be listed saying Pas Yisrael. My understanding, this is what I heard from Rabbi Wein years ago, from his awareness of the OU, at one point he was their kashrus head. His understanding in OU is that they tried to structure products that are of bread orientation, pretzels, etc. They try to structure it that it will be Pas Yisrael, that the Mashgiach lights the fire and the fire doesn't go out, then they try to structure the companies in such a way, but they can't guarantee it and they don't certify it as such. Because a lot of companies might be, I don't know if you call it upgraded or downgraded, but not required to have Mashgiach on premises all the time. They're not required to have Mashgiach Tamidi. You have a pretzel factory. It's quite probable that they don't have a mashgiach in the vicinity, that if the light would go out, that he would kindle it. Not only that, but in Rabbi Wein's inimitable humor, he says, if the fire went out on Shabbos, I would hope the mashgiach doesn't light it. A lot of these companies are running 24/7. They make an effort that it should be Pas Yisrael, but they're not ready to guarantee it. The only time you'll get it guaranteed is if it actually says Pas Yisrael, then you know that it's being certified as such. Typically on Shabbos, if we go with the baked goods that are either regular challah that are baked with that in mind, and they do Pas Yisrael, or you go with like bakery baked goods, rather than the commercial baked goods, you will get Pas Yisrael. Again, required? I can't say it's required. Very significantly, strongly recommended? Yes. Kavod Shabbos Yom Tov, it's a straight Mishneh Berurah. Mishneh Berurah brings it as halacha that a person should make the effort to do so. More than anything, I think it's important, both Shabbos and during the week, that Mashgichim should be aware of the term. I know when my kids first started school, so the teachers, who were all trying to accommodate all the different customs that were in the class, the different families, so they were asking the kids, do you keep Pas Yisrael? Do you keep Chol of Yisrael? Do you? And the kids don't know. They know they're special. Every kid's special. But they started answering these questions like totally unaware of what the words meant. It was actually getting a little comical. But we should know what the words mean. Because sometimes you'll get somebody who'll come in at an event, they'll come into the kitchen, and they'll ask, is the bread Pas Yisrael? Now, it could be that on a Tuesday night Sheva Brachas, we didn't require that the bread be Pas Yisrael. But we should have enough proficiency, at the very least, to know what they're asking, even if we don't know what the answer is. But we could call the bakery, we could call the hashgacha, we could find out. We should understand what the term means. Pas Yisrael means that they went, made the effort, that the fire should have been lit by a Jew so that it has that status.
Does this include cookies?
Cookies. Baked type products. Mizonos hamotzi of the baked form. If something was cooked, then it goes into the next category, which is much more serious. Bishul Akum doesn't have the type of leniencies that we just say we prefer. Again, because bread is a staple, Chazal didn't want to impose it as an absolute necessity. Yeah?
Earlier you said something, and I either misheard you or I don't think I got the context.
I retract.
No, I thought you said that for during the week, that it was fine to have a spalter as long as there was no, like, the Pas Yisrael wasn't available.
That's correct.
So, but like here in Sodor, Pas Yisrael is available, but we have...
Well said. So the argument that is typically made, which allows us to kind of be very casual about this, the argument that's made is that it's not available. Meaning, it's available, but not in the right quality for me. It's available, but not at the right price. It's available, and therefore it becomes the proper way to do it, but we don't impose it on people. If you look at the siman in Shulchan Aruch, it's fascinating how it starts off as, you know, like you're supposed to do this. And then there's this reason that you don't have to do it, and that reason that you don't have to do it, because they were not comfortable imposing that on the greater Jewish world, because bread is a necessity. Yeah?
Now, that you're saying, though, if you buy bread that has looks like it's made by a Jew, it has a Jewish name from whatever, you still have to check to make sure that there was a Jew who actually lived there.
Just because the name is Cones on the bakery doesn't mean it's Pas Yisrael.
So it has to say Pas Yisrael.
For two reasons.
You have to call and check.
For two reasons. One is because Cones started the business the same way that Goldberg's started Goldberg's Bagels. But who owns it now? My understanding is that Empire is not owned by a nice, frummy, Yidl company anymore. It's owned by investors. Just as an example, Empire is not bread, but like, right? And secondly, just because the Jew owns it doesn't make it Pas Yisrael. If he's sitting in the office or he's sitting on vacation, that doesn't make it Pas Yisrael. Yeah.
All the kosher bakeries here in town, Pas Yisrael.
I don't know for a fact, but that's the direction that one usually expects of a kosher bakery. A local bakery typically is Pas Yisrael. I mean, we could verify it just to make sure. I didn't. I mm-hmm. neglected. Theoretically, but that's the general trend. When you're dealing with a local bakery, typically it's Pas Yisrael. Yeah?
If you have bread that's not Hatz Yisrael, and then you do something to it, whether toasting it or making French toast or something, then
doesn't do the trick.
Doesn't
no,
change
doesn't change the status.
No.
Okay. No. Yeah.
What about you've heard that this wonderful bread is available, and it's in a bakery that only does milchik and everything of it. It's all the ingredients, it's kosher, whatever. Does this apply to milchik bread too?
I'm not following the nuance of the question. You're dealing with a non-certified bakery nowadays? We wouldn't buy from a non-certified bakery nowadays because ingredients today with preservatives and the like is so sophisticated that we simply would not buy from a non-certified company of anything that has multiple ingredients. And how do I know it has multiple ingredients? You take one look at the ingredient panel of something that you think is innocuous, like bread, and you have a few ingredients there that, I mean, maybe you know what they are, but I certainly don't know. I mean, I just, you know, you look at them and you could tell this is a sophisticated product nowadays, basically because of preservatives and tastes and whatever they do. So we would not buy from a non-certified. What we would do is buy from a certified that might not be Pas Yisrael. You could, for example, get hamburger rolls. High likelihood that it's not Pas Yisrael. The fan club. Okay, Bishul Akum, which is, as I mentioned, more serious because this is truly binding. It's not just a nice thing when you can. Dover she'eino nachal kamo shehu chai. Anything that cannot be eaten raw. That's criteria number one. And criteria number two is v'gam ola al shulchan melachim. And it can be, it's typically capable of being put on the presidential table. It's fit for the royal table. Now, you understand there's a terrible joke. The food on the plane was fit for a king. Here, king. Here, king. Okay. Fit for a king, we mean for real. Royal table. And the question, of course, becomes which items qualify for that. But clearly, if you were going to be talking about a slice of meat, it could not be eaten raw. And it could be served on the presidential table. It starts getting interesting when you deal with mashed potatoes, pasta. I mean, there are a lot of different items that at first glance you don't think of as really special things. But on the other hand, if they're seasoned properly, they could not be eaten raw, and they're very chashuv in what they are. But going back, a green pepper, a red pepper, it was able to be eaten raw. So Bishul Akum is not even going to start. If it was able to be eaten raw, we don't even start with this. Water. A person walks into a conference, he wants to take water that was heated up, turned on by the non-Jewish staff. Water can be drunk raw, right? Without cooking. So obviously there's no Bishul Akum on the water. And it has to be something fit for presidential table in its type. If that's true, if those criteria are met, Shabishlo Akum, Afilu Bechli Yisrael uvaveis Yisrael, even though it was in Jewish vessels, even though it was done in the home of a Yisrael, even though everything's under control, also mishum b'shulei of the kochavim, it's forbidden because of this rabbinic legislation called Bishul Akum to differentiate us from non-Jews socially. There's a certain control that has to be in place. What is that control? A Jew has to be involved in the fire. Seviruluhu, dahadlakas ha'esh ochitu begacholim, lighting the fire, adjusting the coals, mahani le'inyan bishul, works as far as bishul akum goes, including hishlech sham kisam, even if a person just threw in a toothpick, literally, kisame, a little piece of wood, would be enough in order that we were involved in the fire and it's no longer going to be bishul akum. In the hashgacha commercial setting, bishul akum is handled by the mashgiach controlling the lighters, and everybody knows you don't turn on fires without the mashgiach. I saw a particular establishment that the OU runs, a big restaurant in New York, and they brought in specific technicians, and they wired the gas to the building in such a way that nothing gets turned on without the mashgiach's key. And this way, the mashgiach knows when gas is running into the building, and he knows that he was in charge of lighting the fires. Everything's under tight control. The one thing that even all of that doesn't accomplish, and a mashgiach really has to pay attention, is the more recent type of ovens, last 20 years, maybe more, but I'm only familiar with it, last 20 years, where when you open it, the oven turns off. When you close it, the oven turns back on. The problem over there is that when you open it, the oven went off, the non-Jewish staff or whoever puts in trays of food, and then they close it. They're closing it, turns it on. And that makes the item, the product, either pasakum or bishalakum, depending on what you're producing, which is extremely problematic.
This is why we have such an old oven.
This is why we have such an old oven. We don't have any problems at all. Well said.
It's a convection oven, though.
Yes.
The fan goes off. So,
in such a case, the non-Jewish staff is instructed that they're not allowed to close the oven. They open the oven, they put the stuff in, and they call the mashgiach to close it. And you get them into that habit. I was in Max's on a hashgacha review, and it's very impressive. The best impressive is not that you're impressed with the mashgiach. The best impressive is you're impressed with the non-Jewish staff, that they were trained. And they know, they call over, Rabbi, we need the oven closed. And they'll wait patiently until he closes it. So that's one very interesting nuance. But again, as far as our shul kitchen type of application, we're not anticipating the problem. We're anticipating that someone would ask the question, is this product Bishul Yisrael? And they're obviously not talking about any standard item, because any standard item has to be universally, everybody agrees, it has to be Bishul Yisrael. They're asking about some of the more sophisticated items that are arguments in the kosher world. Tuna fish is a discussion, for whatever reason, not for tonight. Does it have to be Bishul Yisrael or not? It's smoked. What kind of halachas does it have? It's a typical question that someone might ask, and we should at least be totally familiar with the term. And finally, and this I was not sure if I should include, but again, going with the concept of being educated, I think it's important. The topic of chadash and yashan. Chadash meaning new, a product that's from after Pesach. Nothing to do with Pesach, really. It has to do with the Karban Omer that's brought in the time of the Beis HaMikdash on the second day of Pesach. And that Karban allows the use of the new grain. So if something existed before Pesach, then going through that day when the korban used to be brought is going to allow its use. If, however, the item did not exist on the second day of Pesach, then it's got to wait until that korban is brought or the day of the korban has passed. So any grain that's going to be planted in the spring or winter and hits the market, let's say, for argument's sake, January, February, March, is going to be called chadosh. It's new. It hasn't gone through a second day of Pesach experience. It hasn't had that korban or the date of that korban permitted. So again, yashan means it's from last year's crop. It went through Pesach. Chadosh is that it's new and it has not yet gone through Pesach. The halacha is osur lechol chadosh af bezman hazeh. We are prohibited from eating chadosh, the new grain, until it goes through a Pesach. Even today, at techilas lel yudches benissen, until that date during Pesach passes and permits the new grain. There's a long Mishnah Berurah here. I'm just going to pay attention to the four words that I bolded, because that's really what we're looking at here. You're welcome to peruse the detail of the Mishnah Berurah. But the fact is that Chadosh and Yashan is not observed by the multitude of the Jewish people outside of Eretz Yisrael. The fact is that people do not observe it. The question is, why not? In other words, we're assuming these are regular observant Jews. What are they based on? Who ruled like this that we shouldn't observe the laws of Chadosh and Yashan? And why is it that new flour from the new crop and products are being used? So the Mishnah Berurah cites the words of the Ramah, and he writes that, number one, there's a Sfek Sfeika, that's the two Samachs, Sfek Sfeika. We're not sure when we get grain if it's from the new crop or the old crop. I just don't know its origin. Okay, number one. Secondly, Midivrei Sofrim, the assumption that we're working with is that outside of Eretz Yisrael, Chadosh and Yashan is only rabbinic. So if you have a doubt in a rabbinic, it's okay, like a maybe, like I hear maybe where you're coming from. There's also an opinion among the early Rishonim that they only legislated Smuchim le'Eretz Yisrael, lands that are near Eretz Yisrael, but that they did not legislate for the entire world. So if a city is near Eretz Yisrael, would be confused with Eretz Yisrael, or got their products typically from Eretz Yisrael, export, then they're included in this law, even if they're using local produce. But if you're elsewhere, Europe, across the Atlantic, so these Rishonim hold that it's not included in Chadosh and Yashan. And then there's an opinion that Chadosh and Yashan only applies if the grain is raised, harvested, owned by a Jew. But if it's owned by a non-Jew, then it's not included in the laws of Chadosh and Yashan. That being said, the Mishnah Berurah paskins, the last two lines, Av she'en biyodeinu limchos biyad ha-makilim, we're certainly not going to object those who are lenient. Mikol makom, he writes, he's not comfortable with it, and he says the way we would paskin any normal shaila would be to be strict on this, because the vast majority of early authorities say that it's obligatory on us, even outside Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, it is what it is. Why are we lenient? It's quite obvious. We mentioned before, because people need bread. And in Europe, for sure, which is basically our Masorah, is our most recent country, our most recent establishment, was Europe. And in Europe, if you didn't allow the grain, you didn't have food. You took what you can get. And therefore, if there is a lenient opinion to rely on, we go with it. That is considered normal, standard procedure in the hashgacha industry. We allow chadash, the new grain. We do not require disciplined observance of chadash yashan laws. Even in hashgachas that allow the different rabbanim in town to have veto power, and you have one rav who says, I want us to be makbid on yashan, what they will typically do is accommodate yashan. And they will require that the deli, for example, has to store in their freezer yashan rolls. And if someone requests yashan, they'll defrost the roll and they'll give him a yashan sandwich. But it's, again, it's not considered normative observance to require it. It's one of those reluctant things, but it is factual. We are not makbid as a community, as a national hashgacha standard, on chadash yashan. My mother in Muncie, where I grew up, once came home. She specifically bought black and whites from a specific store, and she wanted to impress upon my brother and I how wonderful these black and whites were. And she told us that this store only deals in yashan. And my brother took one bite into the cookie and said, I can tell. It's old. Well, old is referring to the grain. It's not referring to the product. But again, my point of bringing it up is not that we should feel guilty. I'm not sure who that helps. It's not standard operating procedure in the hashgacha world to be makbid on it, but I do believe that it's a necessity for people to be aware of the term. It's a very real halacha, and those who are makbid on it, besides the inconvenience they go through, in many ways they're probably right. But again, that's not the way we paskin, because bread is bread, and it's not so simple. Okay. Yeah?
Can I go back to Bishul Akum? And I know you said you weren't talking about anything specific, but I'm thinking in the Shul kitchen, if we wanted to make our own tuna fish. And
well, the tuna fish that... Slowly, I don't know what it means, you making your own tuna fish.
To buy a can rather than buy it already prepared from, say, from Shalom's.
No. Either this is even before that. Although I don't know, Shalom's, maybe they're doing raw tuna, I don't know. But in all probability, what everyone is doing that you have access to is opening a can. Either they're opening small cans or they're opening industrial size cans. But they're opening up cans. Those cans are fish that's already edible. It's already been cooked. The question is, did it have to be cooked by Jews or does it make no difference? And it depends on the process. There are a few factors. I remember when I took the OU Kashrus course years ago, so Rabbi Ganek was still hot on the subject because he was getting objections, and he handed us a sheaf of papers justifying the OU's position. That was, it was an inch and a half thick, and he had the office copy it for everyone in the course. He was just diehard that he wanted to give everybody the source material for why he did what he did. That's the product as you're going to buy it. Either you're buying Bishul Yisrael tuna fish or you're not buying Bishul Yisrael tuna fish. That's well beyond a decision that's made locally. The only thing you're doing locally is choosing which product to buy. But it's already been decided well before us by the canning companies. The hashgachas make decisions as to what they're willing to certify.
I'm just thinking of the big industrial cans, the industrial-sized cans. They don't come with the Bishul Yisrael.
So in terms of, if you're asking me shoe policy, as long as it has a national hashgacha, we're okay with it. As far as that goes, it's a terminology issue. Someone came into the kitchen and said, I'm makbid on Bishul Yisrael on tuna fish. Do you know if it is or it isn't? This is an example of why it's great to save your labels until the event is over. You have the right as a mashgiach to say, our Rav says it's fine, our Vad says it's fine. If you have a question, I'll be glad to show you the label. And you can make your own decision. Mashgiach is not obligated to be the world's posek. You're just there to certify what was agreed upon and to be able to be courteous to people who have special requests. Courteous. Let's review. And this is why I'm giving you a big mazel tov. The review goes like this. Session one. We covered the topic of insects and bugs. And we made the point that even if in Europe you get very authoritative responsa that say that something should be checked or not be checked, it's virtually irrelevant to the American scene. American scene, as every community, is based on local research. We need to know if bugs are showing up in this product or not. I once inspected a pizza shop and I found that his carrots were terribly discolored on his salad bar. And I asked him, what's with the carrots? He says, what do you mean, what's with the carrots? I scrub them. I wash them in a caustic solution and I scrub them and I soak them. I said, why? He said, because that's what we did in Israel. I said, but that's not what we do here. You can buy an authoritative book that tells you how to check product in Israel, and it's virtually irrelevant in the United States because we're just not dealing with the same bugs and we're not dealing with the same infestations. It's not that we're less from or more from. It's just logistics are the dominant factor when you're dealing with this topic. On the topic of eggs, we mentioned that really the stringency of eggs and the fact that the egg can be totally non-kosher because it has a blood spot is only if the egg could have been fertilized. Because then it's the start of a creature. But if the eggs are being raised in a way that it could not have been fertilized, then the whole issue that you're dealing with is the blood that is the speck. The custom is to dump the egg, but if the egg is already mixed into something and you're already dealing with an issue of bal tashchis, being wasteful, then on the contrary, we'll just scoop out the blood spot and will allow the egg. If, however, the egg was naturally raised, they're very proud that it's being raised naturally, then it could have been fertilized and you have a serious shaila on your hands if it was already mixed in, because it could very well be that the entire egg is in its entirety non-kosher because that blood represents the start of the egg development.
So if it's not fertilized, or we don't know that it was...
Typical purchase in a regular grocery store without added value premium product.
Right.
you can assume is not fertilized and had no potential to be fertilized.
And in that case, the best thing is to dump the whole egg.
The custom is to dump the egg. But if a person either is very troubled by that for economic reasons, I mean, the price of eggs has changed since Reb Moshe wrote his tshuva. He was talking that an egg was 10 cents. We're talking today that eggs, I mean, people are a little annoyed. But certainly, once it got mixed in, we would just pull out the spot as long as it could not have been fertilized. Canned food, even though it's only fruits and vegetables, we require certification or someone reliable with intimate knowledge of the plant. The reason is there's a product, a machine called a retort, which has water in it, and they put the cans into it, and we don't know what was in that water last. And if you had a can of Franks and beans, as an example, then the can becomes its pot. It's a non-kosher pot. Once it heats up, it makes the water non-kosher. And now you're putting in your kosher peas to cook in non-kosher water. You're going to have a kashrus problem. Again, either a hashkacha or someone who can vouch that that particular plant doesn't do other products. It only does this fruit, for example. It only does peaches, in which case someone might responsibly say, as long as you recheck it every few months, you would be allowed to do that. But again, our policy would be to require certification. Yeah.
Does it matter if it's, I mean, does it hold for vegetables and fruits the same?
It depends who you ask. Most recently, I asked a Star K representative, and he was insistent that you have to treat all canned goods the same way. By way of knowledge, I will tell you that years ago, I asked someone from a different hashgacha, and he told me that he doesn't know why, but they've never found a retort in a fruit cannery used for non-kosher. He said, we just never found it. But that's only by way of knowledge. On a practical level, I asked the question, and the answer that I got is you can't rely on that. If it's canned, it should be certified. What are we looking for in a mashkiach? A mashkiach knowledgeable, personally observant, even when he's in challenging situations. On to page 10. Chol of Yisrael, not a requirement. Rav Moshe is very firm that the government supervision can be relied on. The concern which created the concept of Chol of Yisrael is that it was common to mix in non-kosher milk into kosher milk to preserve it better. Apparently, a small amount of non-kosher milk mixed in makes it hold better. But it does exist. Reb Moshe himself says, you know, I observe Chol of Yisrael, but it's not required. What is the purpose of the CRC Hashgacha list, which we shared at the end of session one? It's talking about company products. It's not talking about meats. They get their own lists. It's not talking about restaurants where you're dealing with a chef who, if everybody's got their own standards locally, but a company has a system, and whatever that system is, these national accepted hashkachas are going to be accepted for that. In session two, We discussed Mashgiach responsibilities to make sure the doors are secure, locked when you're done. Sign in accountability for product if you're signing in for 9x13s for whatever reason that you know they're certified because they're coming from a reputable place. You break the seals or you don't break the seals, but sign them in so that the next person who's going to certify the event knows what they're relying on you for. Checking the ingredients, and of course, to be in charge. The Mashgiach owns the place. Nothing budges if the Mashgiach doesn't say so, and therefore develop a rapport with the different people so that they should report to you and be comfortable. Before Shabbos, we open all packages. If something wasn't opened, ask a Shaila. There's a lot that's allowed to be opened on Shabbos, but we don't like to set it up that way. So we try to open everything before Shabbos. The Mashgiach should set up the heating elements or another reputable observant Jew. The food should be totally cooked so that we avoid a lot of questions on Shabbos. And the blech coverings should be in place. On Shabbos, you are at times allowed to take something off the blech and then put it back. Even a liquid, solid. You are at times allowed to take a chulent, scoop something off onto a plate, and then put it back. Take some chicken soup, dole it out. I mean, this is more common in the home setting than in the shul setting. I think in the shul setting, we basically serve everybody at the same time. But in the home setting, for sure, you might take off some soup, either for the kids who are eating early, or for people... most of the people, and then you have two people coming later, something. As long as you're holding it in your hand, typically we use two people, but you dole it out while it's off the blech with intent to put it back, and it's totally cooked so that when you put it back, you're not doing any new cooking. You're allowed to do that. If you're not sure of the guidelines, we can review them. Just request basically a shayla, and we'll go through them in detail. Hot plate, you're allowed to place on Shabbos morning cold, dry, fully cooked food as long as the hot plate has an inverted tin so that it's an unusual, it's a pot on top of a pot, like a cookie sheet. Session 3. What kind of separation do we need going from milk to meat and vice versa? So we discussed that the stovetop grates are assumed to be dry, and even if a little bit of liquid spritzes on them, they kosher instantly from the heat. The oven is a big discussion, whether it's considered like a pot that actually became fleishik or milchik. Drinking glasses, we're worried about residue that's on the lip, and typically we will designate them either fleishik or milchik. Leftover bread and salt, we want to make sure that there's nothing residual. We want to make sure that no one touched it with hands, but if you have uncut bread that would not have been touched by somebody in the middle of the meal, then keep it separate, and you could use it for the next meal of the other type. Milchik bread, generally, is not allowed. We're worried that it's going to be used with meat. Shul utensils, nothing from the outside, has to be authorized to come in, fresh products, has to be toveled and properly marked. Hard cheese, according to the Star K, is a question on the test. The Star K's position, unlike the OU and others, but the Star K's position is hard cheese aged for 6 months, even if it's melted, still gives you the status of hard cheese, which is you have to wait 6 hours before eating meat afterwards. Mixtures of fish and meat are treated just like mixtures of dairy and meat. You're not allowed to have the two pots cooking together with the possibility of splashing or anything like that. But we are allowed to serve fish on meat plates, etc., as long as it's clean and there's no meat present. Finally, session 4. We learned the terms Eino ben Yomo. That means it hasn't been used in 24 hours. We learned the term Nat Bar Nat, which meant a taste of a taste. That means there's no fleishik or milchik present at the present time, but the pot in a previous experience was used for either fleishik or milchik, but the current product is pariv. And we learned the term charif, which means sharp, which means that even if the knife has not been used for 24 hours with meat or dairy, but it once was used with meat or dairy hot, the charif, the onion, the hot pepper, is going to activate that old taste, even if there's no heat, even though it was more than 24 hours, and the onion will become fleishik or milchik based on the knife that cut it. Pariv leftovers will certainly not make you fleishik or milchik, but you would not be eating them together with the other type. What is DE? When you do this question on the test, I hope you laugh. What is DE? It's not driver's ed and all the other brilliant things I put in on the test. Dairy equipment. And we mentioned that the OU does not like DE. They think it's confusing. And even if they tell you it's DE, they want you to check back with them every 3 months to make sure it didn't change. And finally, session 5, which we're not really reviewing, but that's what we did today, Pas Yisrael, Bisha Yisrael, and Chadash Yashan. I thank you all for your attentiveness and your efforts, and I would ask you if you would take 5 minutes to take a glance at this test, which I think you will enjoy. I changed it a little bit. There were some typos. You can do whatever you want. Enjoy it. It is required that you laugh at least 3 times. You must laugh at least 3 times if you want to do that.
Right. Are we doing it?
What's that? What did I say?
Something about
Yotze. If you want to be Yotze the test,